Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Everybody, welcome back to the Drive On podcast. Today, my guest is Debbie Lee. Debbie is a Gold Star mother, the mother of Mark Lee, the first Navy SEAL to be killed in Iraq. Some of you may be familiar with Mark's story. Mark was assigned to Task Unit Bruiser while serving in Ramadi, where his task unit commander was Jocko Willink. If anyone's listened to the Jocko podcast, you've probably heard something about Debbie's son, Mark, and his story. And since becoming a Gold Star mother, Debbie founded America's Mighty Warriors, which is a nonprofit that honors the sacrifices of our troops, the fallen, and their families. Debbie and I both live in the same town, and we ran into each other at a couple of events that were going on here in town. And it's an honor and a pleasure to have Debbie come on and share her story, her son's story on the show today. So welcome to the show, Debbie.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. You know, obviously, it's great when you we were able to meet. It was, you know, sad that the circumstances that we had an instant bond was the losses that we both had to deal with, you, your brother, and me, my son. But I think when you're a Gold Star family member, it brings a lot of comfort when you know that someone knows exactly what you're going through and that there is someone else there, that you're not alone. Because I think oftentimes that's you know, something that we deal with. And I guess that could be anything you're going through. If you're fighting cancer, you feel like nobody else could, you know. If you're just lost your job, you feel like nobody else, you know, that's an easy way for us to get discouraged. So hopefully that brought you a little encouragement, and hopefully I can bring some encouragement today to many others and let people know that no matter what your circumstances are in, you don't have to let those circumstances overcome you. You know, you may not have a choice to the circumstances that were given to you, just as I had no choice on August 2nd when I was notified that my son had been killed, but I did have a choice how I responded.
Absolutely. I think that's beautifully said. And because a lot of times people get that initial surge of support in the first few days and weeks and months after, you know, a loss of a loved one, kind of like the ones that your family and mine experienced. And then that support starts to fade over time. And I think that's a natural thing. People tend to just kind of move on with their lives and they move on, but it might leave the family, the grieving family, feeling like they're all alone without that support. And, you know, I don't think anything could be further from the truth. You know, there's definitely people out there who are ready, willing, able to support people like that and give them, you know, the support that they need. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, feeling like they can reach out to get that kind of assistance when they feel like they need it. So you mentioned, your son. You know, we talked about a little bit about your son, and my brother as well. My brother served in Ramadi, actually during the earlier half of 2006. So he was there, I think he got there in like late December and got there, stayed through maybe June of 2006. And judging from his letters home, the pictures that he took and the stories that he told when he did get back home, that was just not a place that you wanted to be in. That was a rough place, especially during that time period. And he wasn't in Ramadi when your son was killed, but, you know, given the situation that was going on there in 2006, it was a tough place to be in.
Yeah, and Mark's teammates would say that it was the worst piece of real estate over there. They called it the hellhole of Iraq. It was, you know, the majority of our casualties back in 2006 were coming from Ramadi. And if it wasn't, you know, every day or multiples on every day, it was almost every day. It was a horrific place, you know, to be, but it's where we needed to be able to get the enemy that, you know, did so much damage to us here as a country on 9/11. And, you know, Mark's platoon was willing to go find the bad guys, even though they'd been told over and over, don't go out there. That's a terrible place. You know, they knew that was their mission to go, you know, capture and kill the bad guys.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I mean, that is the mission that we were over there for. You know, we were looking to get those bad guys and flush them out and kill or capture as many of them as we could. And, you know, it's because of people like your son and the other people who were serving with him that, you know, we did do a lot of damage to that enemy that was over there. And we, more importantly, I think we kept them from coming back over here and conducting other 9/11 kind of attacks here.
Yes.
And so, you know, when I've been asked several times over the last few years, you know, about my brother's death and, you know, especially with the withdrawal in Afghanistan a couple months ago, the way it went down, you know, people asked me, you know, do you feel like it was all for nothing? And absolutely not. You know, I feel like everybody who went over there, everyone who served, including the people who didn't make it home, you know, we went over there for a reason, and that was to keep the enemy from coming back here and attacking us at home. Yeah. And so, so yes, there were sacrifices that were made, but I don't feel at all that they were all for nothing.
Yeah. And I think, you know, very much so, our foundation, a lot of what we do is working with our veterans who, from combat have post-traumatic stress, traumatic brain injury, and our Helping Heroes Heal program pays for hyperbaric oxygen therapy, hormone and vitamin therapy, natural things that are healing their bodies. And especially, you know, I'm very connected to the Spec Ops community. Our foundation supports all branches of our military, but that core family of mine is that Spec Ops community. And, you know, we give them the best equipment. They get the best training. They're given the best missions, which typically are the most dangerous ones. And then they come back home and they get out. And I just feel like we're, you know, okay, go away now. Don't bother me. Thanks. Goodbye. And,
right.
You know, we talk often in the military community about leave no man behind. And that's what I feel like is happening with our veterans who are coming back home, that they are not getting the help they need. They're not being taken care of. And we work with a lot of them. And I got lots of calls that week when we pulled out of Afghanistan in such a horrific way. And they were struggling. They were struggling. A lot of our Gold Star families were struggling. And I reminded them that what you did, you served nobly, you served honorably, you did the right thing, and you made a difference. This is not on you. This was a lack of leadership in our senior military leaders and coming down from the White House. And, you know, I'm not by any means a person that wants to see us constantly at war. War should always be the last resort. But we tried so many things. And when we were attacked here, I think it was justified. And Mark talks about that in his last letter home about the mission he saw. He was in Iraq, not in Afghanistan. But and for those who are listening today who did serve, please know that your sacrifice was not in vain. You did make a difference over there. You know, unfortunately, you know, we may end up going back again in that part of the world because the ideology of the terrorists over there just continue to go from one country to another country. I call them the flavor of the month. They change whether they're, you know, Al-Qaeda in Iraq or Taliban or whoever, you know, it's that ideology that wants to destroy America and wants to do damage to us. But I'm so proud of all of our men and women who served and sacrificed. And I will never forget your brother or Mark or any of the others who've given their lives so that we can live free every day. And I'm a contributing author in several books and I autograph those books. Live your life worthy of their sacrifice. And that's what our responsibility is as Americans, to make sure that we are doing that. And we do recognize that price that is paid for the freedoms we enjoy every day.
Well said. I think that's incredibly well said, actually. For any of the listeners who maybe are not familiar with your son's story, I know we kind of touched on a little bit, you know, he was in Ramadi and things like that. Could you tell us a little bit about him, you know, what got him into the Navy and maybe whatever else that you'd like to share about him and his time in Ramadi?
Sure. Mark was the youngest of my three children. He was born to me 2 weeks after I went through a divorce. Unfortunately, their father was very violent and abusive. And because of that abuse, the day that I filed for divorce, it was final. And then I found out 2 weeks later, I was pregnant with Mark. And as a single mom with three little kids, one 3, one 18 months, and another baby on the way, no child support, no help, there didn't look like there was any light at the end of the tunnel. But God knew just what I needed in that young man, because from the time he was little, he was such a joyful kid, and he brought so much joy and humor, you know, into our lives. And, you know, what a blessing all three of my children are and the gift that they are. But that young man and his humor, I mean, he'd tell knock knock jokes that he thought were hilarious, and he would be laughing so hard, and they were so stupid that they, you know, but you're laughing hard at him because he's so excited and so tickled that he thinks they're hilarious. But he ended up getting class clown 2 years in a row in high school, and I was always like, and this is gonna get you to college, how? But he watched a Navy SEAL movie, you know, as I'm sure all young men do when they're, you know, junior high age and they want to be a Navy SEAL, you know, and whether that follow through is there, that determination, I don't know at that point that it was. I think it was, you know, it just looked cool. They get to blow things up. They get the beautiful women in the stories, you know, and he didn't, you know, then delve into that too much more. He was going to seminary to become a pastor. And then he had a goal to be a professional soccer player, came home his freshman year and declared that to me. And of course, I always taught my kids, you put your mind to it, you can do whatever you, you know, you believe you can do. And when he came home and told me that, I was kind of like, okay, we're pretty poor growing up. They didn't play it, you know, little league sports or any club teams. And I'm like, Mark, you've never played soccer before. And but I wanted to encourage him. So I'm like, if you think you can do this, okay, well, you know, we'll get you enrolled at the, in playing soccer. And he was in fact the youngest coach at his high school to be a soccer player. His freshman year, he got most improved soccer player, obviously having never played before. He had a lot of room to improve. He was pretty bad when he started, but was in fact trying out for the Colorado Rapids when he blew out his knee and had to have his ACL repaired and have his meniscus removed. And he came home for surgery. And that's when I really noticed him starting to read more about Navy SEALs and, you know, biographies of them, and started going to the local pool where we at and swimming laps and training himself. And that's when he really made the decision. His oldest brother had joined the Marines in August of 2000. His brother-in-law had joined the Army in October of 2000. And in May of 2001, I think he wanted to one-up everybody. I think there's a little competition there. And he went into the Navy recruiting office and had a contract to go to BUDS when he came out. Now, that doesn't guarantee you'll be a Navy SEAL, but that says you're, you know, physically fit enough, you're, you know, smart enough that, yes, you could be a good candidate to go. And so, you know, amazing young man who loved being a SEAL, loved the teams, and actually was connected with his unit that was deploying at Charlie Platoon last minute. They had another Navy SEAL that they had to fire, and they said, we need the best SEAL you got on short notice to come in and acclimate with our team and deploy with them. And so he didn't get to do all the workups he did. And of course, he was the new guy. And, you know, they always give the new guys grief and make it hard on them. But they said after 3 days, Mark was just his character, his humor, you know, his smile, you know, the way he cared for people. It just, they couldn't pick on him anymore. You know, he was definitely part of that team, even though he hadn't done the, you know, workups the previous year with them. And they deployed to Ramadi in April of 2006 and had one of the most kinetic deployments and missions that any of the units had seen over there. And they did, they made a huge difference. They worked a lot with the Marines and the Army over there, which was very different. Typically the SEALs will, you know, work at night. They don't work with anybody else. And they were doing daytime missions, you know, working with the Marines and the Army, and amazing group of very humble leaders on Task Unit Bruiser, which I'm blessed now that, you know, that's my family. But the day that Mark died, it was 115, 120 degrees. And There were four SEALs that were on the rooftop. They'd been fighting for 2 hours. And in the movie American Sniper, Mark is the third main character. So Chris and Tay are the two main characters portrayed in that. Mark is the SEAL then who's in the movie next the most that's actually killed in the combat scene. And that's supposed to be me reading part of his last letter home. And they give a glimpse into what it was like, but the guy said it didn't even come close to showing how bad that firefight was. And they'd been fighting for 2 hours. Mark carried the big gun, so he carried anywhere from 150 to 180 pounds in addition to his own weight. You know, we live in Arizona. Sometimes we see 115, 120, but I guarantee we're not carrying 150, 180 pounds. We're not having, you know, bullets being fired at us or firing bullets back and forth or running in that gear. So even though I've been to Iraq twice, I went on patrol with the 1st to the 4th Cav 3 different times. I wore the body armor. I felt the weight of that. But I wasn't in battle. Nobody was firing on us when we were out there. So I get a glimpse, but I can't even completely understand how these guys do that. And his buddy Ryan had been severely injured. The bullets hit the weapon. And so he had severe shrapnel injuries to the head and he fell to the ground. Two of the SEALs quickly dropped to their knees to help Ryan. And Mark could have made that very same choice. But his choice that day was to stand up into the line of fire. He knew he had the big gun. He knew there was no medic there. And he could tell by looking at Ryan, it was serious and they needed a medic up there. He knew he could provide that cover, hopefully, to get the medic up there. He knew there was a risk that he could be giving up his life, but he knew it was the right thing to do. And they did. The medic got up there, took one look at Ryan and said, we got to get him out here immediately, or there's no chance for survival. So then not just once, but a second time by himself, Mark stood up in the line of fire again to provide that cover so they could get down off of the roof. And they sent Ryan off for medical attention and they went back to the base, which I'm proud to tell you was named Camp Mark Lee in his memory. And I got to visit Ramadi in 2007 when I went over, went to Camp Mark Lee and brought back some of the soil by the base of the sign there. But when they got back, I know Chris Kyle told me later that they're pretty sure there's no way Ryan could survive his injuries. And they were waiting for the hospital to call and inform him of that. Ryan did, in fact, survive for 3 more years, actually lived here in Phoenix, and then died from complications from surgery. And as they got back to the base, you know, we've watched our Navy SEALs do some things and they seem superhuman at times, but I can tell you they're just as real as you or I are. And they got some water to refresh themselves and were taking their gear off. And the chief came in and said, we just found 30 of the insurgents that just attacked us. And without hesitation, Mark looked at his chief and he said, Roger that, let's go get them. So they put their gear back on and they went back into that godforsaken place. They cleared several houses. They went in the last house Mark would be in and they cleared the bottom of the house and started up the steps. And they heard him yell, on me. And he was saying, I got the lead on this. You guys follow me. And as they went up those stairs, they drew fire through a window. And for the last and final time, Mark made the choice again to stand into the line of fire. He could have stayed below the wall. He could have waited for backup. Probably half his platoon would have been killed, but he made the choice to give his life to save his teammates. And, you know, I think of the words on me, you know, that's where we all need to be in our life. No matter what's given to us, what mission in life we're given that, you know, we have to do. If we stay on me and march forward, you know, and not have a pity party, not feel sorry for ourselves, that we can make a difference, whether we're facing, you know, a diagnosis of cancer. You know, for me, I had no choice. The news that was given to me on August 2nd, I could have curled up in a ball and felt sorry for myself. And I get it. You know, I've been a widow for 27 years. I'd lost a husband before, but losing your child, and I've done lots of reading of grief. They say that is the worst, the instant death of a child. And so I get it when people can't pull themselves up out of that. But it would have physically made me sick. The stress does crazy things to our body. You know, that's not how I'm wired, you know. And, you know, by God's strength and with his help, I started America's Mighty Warriors to continue to take care of our troops. And did that mean I ignored grief? I, you know, denied it and act like Mark didn't die? No, you have to go through grief to get to the healthier side. You can't go under it, around it. You've got to go right through the middle of it. And people go through at different speeds. There's no right or wrong way to grieving other than just don't get stuck. Continue to go through it. But, as I said, we started America's Mighty Warriors, and we have a house in Arizona called the Heroes Hope Home, where other families of the fallen can stay for free. We have one in Florida, the Serenity Hope Home. We do retreats in Texas for our Gold Star families who lost a loved one in combat or in training. We, as I mentioned, the Helping Heroes Heal program, where we're doing a lot for our veterans struggling with suicide and post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury, or we're paying for hyperbaric oxygen therapy, hormone and vitamin therapy. These are just a few of the therapies that are providing healing. Most of what our veterans are doing is just masking the symptoms. The drugs that the VA is giving them, whether it's alcohol, you know, abuse prescription drugs, the legal drugs, and I get it. I get why they want to take the pain away, whether it's emotional or physical. But when there's things like what we're doing that are actually healing their brains, so much of that is in the frontal lobe. That controls your sleep, your emotions. So no emotions or the raging emotions. That's the memory issues. And so many of that's our veterans, that's the three main things they're struggling with. Mark's last letter home talked about doing more random acts of kindness. He said, when's the last time you paid for a stranger's cup of coffee or meal or tank of gas? So that's one of our other programs. It does go up to a $5,000 grant. Now, the veterans themselves can't come ask because, unfortunately, we have found veterans that are just going from charity to charity to see what they can take. And that's not who we want to support. So right. If you knew someone, you could reach out and say, hey, I've known this person for, you know, 3 years, 5 years, all my life. They'd be the last one to come ask for help. Their child's got cancer, or their house just burnt to the ground and they didn't get their insurance yet. Or, you know, those typically are a little more crisis situation. But usually within 24 hours, we can have a vote from our board and a check, you know, in the hands of the person that's struggling. And that's so different than many of the other foundations that help. The red tape that's out there takes forever, you know, and most of these situations, they need help, you know, immediately. Right. And there's probably not anything I wouldn't do for our veterans. We've introduced, you know, tons of different legislation. If there's an injustice, we'll try to step in and make that right, whether it's a corporation, our government. You know, we can be the voice, you know, for our troops and our military families. And, you know, for me, I get to see the impact that Mark is still making in such a crazy way. You know, it's been 15 years since he left. And as I say, redeployed to heaven. And that kid is still making a crazy difference around the world. And so until God calls me home, I think my marching orders and mission is marked out for me, and it's my honor to be able to do this for our military and our families of the fallen.
I like how you put that, redeployed to heaven. It's an interesting way to look at it, and I think it's a positive spin to it, you know, because he is still making an impact on on the world here, and his mission's not over, and you're continuing on with, with his mission, and you're doing the work to help out other veterans, help out the families, and help out people who are in need. And it seems like that's the type of person who he was too, you know. When you had someone wounded sitting there, you know, and he stood up and provided covering fire and everything like that. Like, that's helping, you know, and I know that that is one of the things that they teach you in the military. When you're in a situation like that, where you have a wounded person who needs medical attention, but if you're still taking fire, or if, you know, the medic can't get to you because of, you know, the fire that you might be taking, you know, the number one priority is to establish security. And I'm absolutely positive that that's what he had in his mind, is we need to squash this this attack and get the medic up here to give the medical attention that he needs. It might seem counterintuitive, because, you know, if, you know, in any everyday situation, if you see someone's hurt, you're naturally just going to go run over to them and try to help them if you can. But to almost... it almost would feel like just turning your back on that, but that's not at all what he was doing. Like, to an outsider looking at the situation, that's not at all what he was doing. Because, you know, if he didn't start shooting back and providing that kind of cover fire, that would have made it take longer for the medical attention to get there. And it could have even caused the enemy to come and overrun their position, creating even more casualties, including potentially himself. As much as you want to be there for someone else and help them physically as much as you can, sometimes the best thing that you can do is stand up and return that fire. And so it seems like from what you're saying, it seems like Mark did exactly what he was trained to do, what he was meant to do, especially carrying the big guns. So like that's what they're there for, is to lay down that fire. As difficult as it may have been to stand there and return fire, especially with maybe protection of a wall or something nearby, that's exactly what he needed to do. So you definitely should be proud of him for having that kind of courage to stand up and do what he needed to do.
Very proud of him.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you should be. I think we all are. If we hear his story enough and tell his story, and I think we all can be proud of the fact that there are people like him out there who are willing to do those difficult, courageous things.
Yes.
So that other people may be benefiting and getting the attention that they need. And, in a way, the reason why I bring all that up in a way, it seems like that's what you're doing too, because like you said, you could have just curled up in a ball and stayed there for years and never gotten up and done anything, but you did, you stood up and you said, okay, there's still a fight that needs to be fought. And, you don't have bullets flying over your head, thank God, but you have, people who are in serious need and in some cases life and death serious kind of needs, where people are struggling with their grief, if they're a Gold Star family or with depression or PTSD or any number of other things, and you're standing up and you're taking that fight to the problem that they're having and you're attacking it head on. Not in a physical fight kind of way, the way maybe that Mark was involved in, but it's right. Definitely in a way that is attacking the root of the problem and not just, like you said before, covering up the symptoms.
Yeah. And I often tell people, that my choice that day was to put on his boots and pick up his weapon and stay in the fight. And I always preface that with, I'm not firing bullets at anybody yet, but it is a fight to make sure that our men and women have the care that they need. When I'm up on the halls of Congress fighting to introduce legislation to get them the help, it's a fight. It's a different kind of a fight. And I don't ever want to compare myself to what our men and women do in combat. Like I said, I had a glimpse, when I went out on patrol, I got to see the lay of the land. I got to see the houses. I got to smell the smells, but we weren't being fired on when I was out there. I mean, we could have been, but we weren't. So I don't know what that feels like to know someone's trying to kill you, right. And that hear the bullets whizzing by you and be running, carrying the gear and doing that day after day after day. That's not a just one-time occurrence for Mark and his team. Now, obviously it depends on, where you're at, what part of the country, what your MOS is in your military unit as to what you're doing there, but they were doing this over and over and over. And I think as Americans, the majority of civilians take for granted the freedoms that we do have and the dear, dear price that is paid. And that's why, as painful as it is to tell Mark's story every time, I've been telling his story for 15 years and I've not once have I told it where my heart doesn't hurt. But I think people need to know, people need to understand, this is not just a number. We didn't lose over 6,000 troops. How does that affect us? Even for me to say that right now, I'm like, 6,000. But when you personalize it, this was my son. This was your brother. Here's who they were. Here's how they lived their life, and here's how they gave their life for you. I think that causes most civilians to stop and pause and say, oh my gosh, yes, I could understand that mom. I can't imagine losing my kid. I can understand that brother. I got siblings. I can't imagine, And so it causes them to step back and think, and at least for that moment, realize that there's a very dear cost that has been paid through the ages, you know, not just Iraq and Afghanistan, but that has been paid through the ages by a small percent of men and women who are willing to give their lives for us to have the freedoms we have here in America. And that's one of the things, you know, Mark talks about in his last letter home. He says, I realized over here the great country we live in and the obligation we have to keep it that way.
Absolutely. And I think when people throw around big numbers, like you said, 6,000 and, you know, 9/11 was, you know, somewhere around 3,000 people who were killed that day. When you have big numbers like that, it's hard for people to wrap their heads around, mm-hmm. right? And you know, I'm just as guilty as that of that too, because, you know, after 9/11, when the final numbers were coming in of how many people were actually killed during the 9/11 attacks, the number just was too big for me to really grasp. But then a few years later, there was some documentary, I forget exactly what it was called, but where it highlighted individual stories of who some of these people were. Yeah. And they went and they followed, you know, the families around, and they talked about the people, the husbands, the fathers, the mothers, the daughters, the whatever they were to those people. And they followed them along their whole story. And I actually felt like I started to feel a piece of their pain, not anywhere near what they were feeling, right. obviously, but it made me feel like, wow, it was a tragedy before, but oh my gosh, it's so much worse now. You know, it really makes you feel that. And so my hope with allowing you to, you know, share a piece of Mark's story, and you know, when I wrote my book about my time in Afghanistan and losing my brother, my hope was that we would be able to share a piece of who these people were, my brother, your son, and other people like that. And I really do encourage other Gold Star families and other people who have lost their loved ones to continue telling their story, because you don't want the last chapter of his book to close and that just be it, and no one pick up the book again and just let it collect dust sitting in the corner. So I keep telling his story, and I want people to feel a little bit of that pain, so that when we are, you know, asked as a country, you know, to go and, you know, fight in a war, we stop and think, you know, is this really the right move? And I'm not anti-war or anything like that. You know, I joined the military voluntarily. Right. I'm not into just jumping right into
a conflict. Yes, I agree.
You know, and so I think by sharing these stories, we'll start to really feel like we know who some of these people are and know what the true cost is, and hopefully some of these stories will stick with people.
Yes.
So, for people who are out there who are looking for assistance that America's Mighty Warriors might provide, how can they go about getting in touch with your organization?
So they can reach out to us through the website, which is America's, AMERICAS, Mighty, MIGHTY, Warriors, WARRIORS.org. Or the email is the same thing, americasmightywarriors@gmail.com. You can reach us by phone at 623-537-5322. And we are here, as I said before, it's our honor to be able to help our men and women who served, to support our Gold Star families, and to be there in whatever way we can for those who were willing to give their lives for the freedoms that we enjoy every day. That wasn't required of all of them, but obviously, you know, we know the cost of war, we know the price, and you know, it's my honor. I love our country, and it's my honor that my two sons and son-in-law all served to defend us. And you know, it doesn't get any more noble and honorable than to give your life the way that Mark did, selflessly, for all of us in America. Yes, he did that to defend his teammates immediately while he was there, but that trickles down to each one of us. And as I said before, we have a responsibility to live our lives worthy of that sacrifice.
Absolutely. Yes, we do. And I know that there's going to be some people who want to help support America's Mighty Warriors in your mission and in what it is that you're doing. So what are some ways that people can support you?
Well, obviously, we always need financial support to be able to pay for the programs. Our Healthy Heroes HEO program on average costs $15,000 to $17,000 for the year-long program for each veteran. But we always need volunteers. We need people that can come in and provide, you know, a service, whether it's, you know, a CPA, a lawyer, you know, to do marketing, you know, social media, any of those things. If you've got a skill or talent and want to donate some time, please reach out to us. Everybody can help promote us. So make sure you're liking, you know, our pages on social media, share what we're doing, encourage others. If you were touched by this podcast and what we're doing, let other people know. 95% of what comes into our foundation goes back to our troops, veterans, and Gold Star families. We work really hard to make sure that percentage stays high. I get so frustrated when I hear of a foundation and you find out 30% went to the cause and the rest went to exorbitant salaries or ridiculous fundraising expenses or parties or events. And that's not who we are.
Right.
You know, and I'd be more than glad to send anybody our 990s to verify that. And I always tell people, if you're going to support somebody, please check out where the money's going. Because a lot of them, you know, people say, but I saw them on TV and this person was their, you know, spokesperson. I'm like, yeah, and that person gets paid $600,000 to be their spokesperson. That doesn't mean that they believe they got a paycheck for it, you know. So just check out those charities. Like I said, 95% of what comes into ours, you can count on, is being spent wisely and making a huge difference in our military community. And those are some of the major things that people can do to support us.
That's great. And yes, definitely, you know, open up your wallets and donate to America's Mighty Warriors. But, you know, if financially, if you can't support in that way, you can always go to Amazon Smile. That's a way where you go to Amazon or smile.amazon.com, and you can link your Amazon account to a nonprofit organization. America's Mighty Warriors is listed in there. And you can have a percentage of all of your purchases. Amazon will donate a portion of that to the organization that you chose in there. It doesn't cost you anymore. Your purchases cost exactly the same as they would if you didn't do this. So there's really no downside to it.
Yeah. And you can also do that through Fry's. Right. I know here in Arizona, I don't know, you know, if what your reach is here for those who listen, but you can go to Fry's. I can't remember what their parent company's name is, but they've got
Kroger.
Kroger. Yes, Kroger, all over the United States. And you can go on Kroger and select America's Mighty Warriors. Also, if you like pizza and you purchase through Papa John's and use the code AMW, you get 20% off and they give 10% back to our foundation as well. If you fly and you put in, you still would get your miles, but there's a place where it says extra rewards when you purchase your business extra rewards. If you put in 882565, then we get points for your flight as well. We can in turn use those to get our veterans to medical appointment, get our families to the retreats, that type of thing. So those are a couple of the things that are out there. Lots of times your employer will also have a match. So if you make a donation, your employer will match that and give back. So that's always a great way to see if that's something that's, you know, possible as well. So.
Yeah, there are tons of options. I guess the point is keep America's Mighty Warriors in the back of your mind, so that when giving opportunities come around, you know, through your employer or other places, like, you know, your airline miles or things like that, you can help support them because they're Debbie and her team are doing incredible things for the veterans, for the Gold Star families, for the people who need the help and maybe just aren't getting the help that they really need.
We also do have a lot of people that will host an event for us. And that could be anything from, you know, a bake sale or money from a garage sale up to a gala event. So we always need people to do that. We've got a gentleman running the Ironman in California this weekend that just reached out to his friends, and I got an email. He's raised almost $5,000 just asking people to donate. So, you know, again, he didn't have to, obviously he's participating in the event, so there's been some preparation, but he would have done that anyway. And then just to send out some emails and encourage people that he knew to help support us.
So there you go. Exactly. So there's plenty of ways to help out. And I really do encourage people to help out America's Mighty Warriors as much as you can, because I really do support their mission and what they're doing. I really think it's great work. And you know, it's continuing Mark's legacy as well. And that's always a good cause. So Debbie, it has been a pleasure speaking with you today. It's been an honor. Again, the website, americasmightywarriors.org, and social media. I just want to make sure you have a chance to throw that in there. You're on Instagram, Facebook, anywhere else?
Twitter. And under those were America's Mighty, because our name's too long. You can't get all the, so it's America's Mighty. LinkedIn, we're on LinkedIn as America's Mighty Warriors. So.
Excellent. And I will have, for the people listening, I will have links to all of this in the show notes, and we will definitely keep you updated with things going on that America's Mighty Warriors are up to, any events that they're having, and ways that you can support them. So with awesome. That, thank you again, Debbie.
You bet. Thank you so much. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube at Drive On Podcast.